Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Hey, folks. How you doing? This is the Lethal Mullet coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. And, of course, here for the flagship show of course, Lethal Mullet Network. That is, of course, Lethal Mullet Podcast. Looking at all the action movies from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. And today, we're looking at a movie that really is a bit of a wasteland sci-fi, but also a bit of fun, and without a doubt, has some of the greatest late 80s stunt work, particularly in the end sequence. That is, of course, Cherry 2000, which we're joined by the amazing Kyle Wagner of FPN, of course, one of the co-founders and a guy who absolutely adores this movie. Kyle, how are you?
I am doing well. This is always a fun movie to talk about. It's got a little bit of an interesting backstory to it. And one of those movies that kind of, I think it was, I would call it a cable hit as far as how it succeeded in the 80s when it came out. This film was released in, 87 with a runtime of about an hour and 40 minutes. And I'm going to say it's probably its biggest claim to fame was introducing the world to Melanie Griffith.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, she had only done what TV up until that point, probably.
Yeah. I think that was pretty much it at that point that she had just done some TV or a couple of just limited spots here. In fact, I'm just curious. She had done a lot of little things here, but she was in an episode of Miami Vice, actually, which you just talked about recently on Lethal Mullet. But I would say that this was pretty much her big TV debut.
Oh, without a doubt.
Or, I mean,
movie debut. But, I mean, this was a VHS hit. I mean, it was huge. The trailers were on almost every single 87 VHS. You couldn't miss this trailer when it came out, and then you'd watch the movie when it came out a couple of months later on VHS in 87. It was fantastic. Now, folks, want to put a big shout out to two recent episodes, of course. One where we had Richard Belosky on, so big thanks to Richard, and of course to all the listeners that are coming across from Skywalking Through Neverland, and of course Talking Apes. Here you can enjoy all that sort of stuff and more. Of course, we talk about some of the greatest old movies when it comes to, particularly special effects and science fiction, as well as action. And, of course, to those that are coming across from the Bearded Trio, thanks to, of course, having Rob Wainford on yesterday. And it was more than just a laugh. It was a great insight into, of course, the big three beards. No, we're not just talking about Chuck Norris's beard, are we?
No, we are not. That is, you don't talk bad about Chuck's beard for fear of your own safety.
No, we do not. That's fine, of course. Now, folks, before we go too far into it, I want to let you know how you can catch this show and many others like it. Make sure that you are subscribing to, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. You can also find the social link down in the ticker below there, of course, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat. Is there any others I've missed? I'm really lost there.
No, I think mine's MySpace and Earthlink are still out there too. So,
g'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. As, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle @thelethalmullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy
your action cinema.
And where can we find you, buddy, out there?
Of course, you can always find me floating around on the Phantom Podcast Network, mainly at fpnet.podbean.com. Or if you want to look for me on the socials, you can find me on the socials on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
That's right. And it's up there on the screen for you too, folks. Now, a bit of loss for words for this, because a lot of people watch these now, and then we're heading into the news here, folks. We started with Star Wars Andor. You either liked it or you didn't, or it was too slow for you, and, you know, that slow burn meant you missed the rest of the episodes. That seems to be the consensus with some fans. Rob even mentioned last night he got about 20 minutes in and just found it a little bit too slow for him. Different tastes, you know, it is what it is. But I like the slow burn. I certainly like the fact that they took a bit of time to build a story that's not really just about Star Wars. You take away the title, Andor's more than just about Star Wars.
Oh, so I've been on a few podcasts to talk about Andor, and we're going to be talking Andor more on the Phantom Podcast Network soon, but I really like this, and I think anybody, I can understand why people feel like they got a little bored with the first two episodes, but I think there's a reason why they put out the first three episodes, because the pace picks up so much in episode three. And if you've heard interviews with Tony Gilroy, who wrote these first three episodes as well as directing the series, he has even said this was an adjustment for him. He's used to working within a 128-page movie script kind of thing, and now he's got 12 episodes of a TV, actually technically 24 episodes of a TV series to work on. So he has a little bit more flexibility and can take some time to develop these characters. And I think in this case, it really pays off well with Andor. And I think anybody, I'm going to say two things. If you watched Andor and you didn't watch all three episodes, go back, because you're doing yourself a disservice. I would also recommend this. If you watched Andor and it wasn't really connecting with you, go back and rewatch Rogue One and then watch Andor. You're going to find yourself catching things and enjoying it more, because there's going to be certain things you're going to process. Use Rogue One. Give yourself a refresher on Rogue One if you haven't, because it just, I saw it on IMAX. I went and saw it on IMAX about 2 weeks before Andor came out, and it didn't make a difference for me, but I do think everything works very well with Andor. I love the espionage. I love the dirty look of it. I call it Star Wars for grown-ups is what it is.
So is it Andor or is it Under? Cassian Under, of course. Good old Stellan Skarsgård. I can't not say it how he says it now. We did it on What a Piece of Junk and just did it also with Richard. And even Richard says, yeah, it's Cassian Under.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever Stellan says, that's what we roll with. We don't mess with
He's Stellan. The Baron, man. You can't not say it about Baron Vladimir Harkonnen says that it's Cassian Under.
Yeah, well, you know. I just don't argue with the man, period. He scares me.
So Viking blood, I'll tell you. Now, yeah. Got to say something interesting here is that now we've got a bit of a three-ring circus going, folks. That's three rings. That is, of course, Doom, Star Wars, and Marvel, both Duke Leto Atreides, and, of course, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, all in all three. I mean, it's getting crazy.
Well, I mean, that's what's happening, though. You've got these major franchises, and especially something like Marvel and Star Wars, where you have such a wide variety of characters, and then you have Dune, which is just this epic undertaking. And yes, you bring in actors you feel comfortable with working with, and Denny brings in a lot of names because there's a lot of people who want to work with him. And I mean, when you look at it, a lot of the top actors in Hollywood, that's where they're working right now, is within that Marvel or Star Wars or both. And then they're going to other things, but it's like, it's a requirement. If you're going to be a successful actor in Hollywood, now you either have to have that Marvel or Star Wars film under your belt.
100%, folks. Now, Avatar's just been re-released in cinemas due to, obviously, Avatar The Way of the Water, number two, or as I like to call it, Avatar 2 Judgment Day. Bacall, what do you reckon?
Actually, I have an update about that. I was just reading the box office numbers here in the States came out because the Avatar re-release started this Friday. It made $30 million this weekend. It actually made more money than the new Olivia Wilde film that's been kind of getting mixed reviews and has a very unique history to it as well. But yeah, it made $30 million in its opening weekend on the re-release.
Wow. You know, and I wish they would, you know, like, especially when something like that comes back, you know, you wish it the best always, you know, when it comes to, you know, people having a chance or even new fans that didn't grow up with it. I mean, 2009 is quite a long time ago when that came out. And we've had three versions of the movies in total. So we've got the theatrical, slightly extended, then a much bigger extended edition, which I think is the better one personally. And again, that's kind of a slow bird in the middle of that one too, but it thickens the world up. And, you know, what's interesting about that is that, you know, he's put so much faith in these sequels now that he's got a fourth one he's currently working on. Instead of giving us The Abyss, Blu-ray, Special Edition, Jim, what are you doing? True Lies, Special Edition, Blu-ray, where is it? Come on.
I think there's an issue going on with him and digital, and these movie companies are not going to not put these things out on digital. No, and I suspect we are going to see The Abyss soon. There's been a lot of rumors. It's making the circulation on cable again. And so I think there is a possibility we see The Abyss soon. True Lies, I know there's more to it than just Jim Cameron. I had read an article about that. There's a whole mess involved. There's a whole mess involved with True Lies. But the thing about Avatar is this, and I do not care what anybody says. You can go on about the story all you want. Avatar was one of those films that stands out for Jim Cameron because it changed movie making and it changed visuals. And it's to this day, the best 3D movie I have ever seen. It is the best 3D period. And while I'm not going to say I'm excited for Avatar Way of the Water, I'm not like, oh my God, Avatar is coming. Oh my gosh. But I am very intrigued and I'm looking forward to it because I know just in 10 years of technology, or actually almost 15 now with Cameron and the technology developments, if nothing else, this movie is going to be absolutely visually stunning.
Oh, it will be. And that's the key to it, you know, is that it will be a visual feast. What has worried me in the past is, you know, that is he able to replicate the success he's had with other sequels? Sequel writing is where he's the best, you know. First Blood Part 2, Terminator 2, Judgment Day. I mean, the list goes on, and the amount of like sequels he's had a hand in and created, and original projects too, I've got to say. But
Time out. You cannot mention sequels without mentioning Aliens.
Yeah. But you know, I'm partial to Alien 3.
Yeah, I know. I'll give you the director's cut on Alien 3.
What do you mean there's no guns of any kind?
I have my issues with Alien 3, but that's for a whole other podcast.
I don't. Folks, I'll put it out there. I grew up loving Alien and Aliens. And you know what? I love all three. The fourth one, we don't talk about that one. That's
definitely wrong. Like I said, I will give you
the space balls of Alien movies. Yeah. I tell you, that is the space balls of Alien movies.
They were doing the good drugs on that set. That's just, we'll just leave it at that.
Man, whatever Morse was on the set of Alien 3, more of it, man, because that guy really was willing to go toe-to-toe with the big green foe with just his hands, you know? Like, he's just like, let me at him, like Scrappy do.
Yeah, well, like I said, I have my issues. That's a whole other podcast but I will say, like I said, I do think the director's cut does make Alien 3 a much better film than what it was portrayed in its initial theatrical run.
I would say it's on a par with the first film, folks, when it comes to that. Aliens is what I love about that movie is it's not what you expect going in the first time. Really is. It's like 40 miles of bad road, I remember Cameron saying. And the best thing about it is he did exactly what he set out to do. He brought the war to it. You know, he was going to war, basically. You know, it's the whole idea is that it's a bug hunt, but the troops were coming in. And it's the best incarnation of that sort of, you know, combat marines in space, you know. And we've had how many different Warhammer things about space marines, Starship Troopers, even obviously ripped off something that was basically influenced by Starship Troopers, which is the Colonial Marines. So it's interesting that, you know, Cameron still did it better than a lot of people out there. And he hasn't been able to top that military feel, even with this stuff in Avatar.
Well, okay. So here's the other thing too. I'm just going to say this for Aliens. In my book, the true Aliens 3 was the original Aliens miniseries that came out produced by Dark Horse Comics, which is absolutely phenomenal to this day. Obviously, it's not canon anymore. That's fine, whatever. But, you know, when it comes to Cameron and sequels, he does have a lot of success. I think with Avatar, though, there's something more for him with Avatar. Avatar is kind of like his baby. And
yeah, it's Star Wars.
Avatar is something he's always wanted to do for forever when he finally got it out. And then it's just because it's been so long between these first two films. And unfortunately, whether we like to admit to it or not, the plot of Avatar, the first Avatar film, has been turned into a little bit of a joke over the years. And for all the, and people tend to forget that Avatar, the thing that made Avatar so special for me when I saw it was you were just so pulled into this world that Cameron created. Yes, it was a kind of a basic story, and it had its things in it, but we were so pulled into it between the visuals, the music, and stuff that it boosted the story up. It was one of those things where everything complemented each other. So that's why the original Avatar worked, and it was visually stunning. It was one of the. It came out at a time when 3D IMAX was just really not even a huge thing yet, and people were still blown away by that. I own it on 3D Blu-ray, and I have a 3D Blu-ray TV and player, and I'll still watch it once a year on that 3D because the 3D is just that sharp.
Yeah, it is good. I got to say, it is very good. Now, folks, also, we have, of course, Matt Reeves' Batman, which pretty much seems to be, along with the Joker series of films, the only real taken seriously, as we can say, by both DC and fans, line of films that are going across. We obviously got the Snyder Cut universe that fans really still want. I think at the end of the day, DC thought they could put out the Snyder Cut, and that would just shut them up. But if anything, it's made them even more vocal.
I mean, Warner Brothers and DC have basically gone on record as saying they wish they would have never done that.
Yeah, that's right.
They basically gave into the peer pressure, and I think because of COVID and a bunch of different litigating factors, that's they pulled that move. Right now, what's really interesting is because we don't really still know what the future of Warner DC is, because now all of a sudden there's a lot of rumors that Comcast might be in line to actually buy it from Discovery, because Discovery is like not realizing what the kind of money pit they might have gotten themselves into with this. And you know, Comcast would love, and Universal would love, to have the DC franchise under their control for several reasons. But the other aspect of it is I've got to be honest with you. I haven't been that excited about the film, but there is getting to be more and more buzz about how good Black Adam is. And you have Black Adam, you have Shazam coming out, you have Aquaman, which has been moved back to next Christmas. And I think you can still keep Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman in the mix. And then they conclude, I think you keep Matt Reeves' Batman as its own separate thing. And you go forward with that. They needed to leave Joker alone, and the rumors of what they're doing with Joker 2 just have me completely turned off. I do not
need a musical. What the hell?
I don't need a musical. I don't need Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn. Margot Robbie owns that character. Let her run with it and go from there. You have some building blocks within that DC universe. They've just got to get some things sorted out, period, figure out the direction they're going to go in. And I think the biggest two things is they've got to figure out who is going to be their Superman and who is going to be their legit mainstream Batman. I would still like to see Henry Cavill get a legitimate shot at it, because I really felt like he never got a proper script as Superman.
No, not even in Man of Steel. It's a good film. I like
it. It's a very solid film, and I think he's good in it. But the only time I ever felt like he started to kind of hit his stride as Superman was at the very end of Justice League, he's come back from the dead.
That felt like Superman.
Yeah. I felt like we were starting to get to that Superman we know. So, but it's so convoluted. And, you know, the problem on the DC Warner side is that they've always felt like they had to play catch up to Marvel and get where they were at. So they rush things. And you can't rush it and catch up to it. You need to build it. And if you don't build it, it doesn't work.
Oh, no, 100%. Now, folks, also, obviously, we are part of a bigger network called the FPN. And that's such a big group of, talented creators and podcasters, and headed by, of course, Kyle, one of the co-founders, and, of course, Kevin, the Raider Nerd Reitzel, which you all know. Can you tell us what's been happening over at FPN? Obviously, we've got a lot of Star Trek content right now, too, which is really interesting.
Yeah, Star Trek has kind of definitely had a franchise resurgence. I think about a month ago was the first time in over a year we didn't have a week without a Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. obviously very, it's gotten very popular. We have, of course, our Union Federation show, which is kind of the head of our Star Trek. And of course you have your Making Treks as well that you mm-hmm. are able to put out on occasion. And we recently entered a partnership with, of course, Amy Nelson, one of our co-hosts on Fandom Podcast Network's Union Federation, also has her network, the BQN, which covers all things Trek. And we've been doing a little bit of family sharing. Let's just a family sharing plan. You can find All Good Things in Galaxy Class on the FPNet master feed, while Union Fed is on the BQN feed, which is given every works out for regular exposure. And with so much Star Trek right now, it's good to be covering it. I mean, for my money, Adam, Strange New Worlds is probably the best thing that we've had in Trek in a mm-hmm. very long time. I think Ansem Out as Captain Pike and everything they're doing on show is wonderful. I am a big fan of the animated series Lower Decks. I think it's fun. I think it's different. And a lot of people worry because of how the Rick and Morty people can be, but I think they do pay a lot of proper, they know their Star Trek knowledge and they respect it and they have fun with it. But I don't think it's done in an insulting way. And I think it's done in a very intelligent way. I have my mixed bag with Discovery. I have my mixed bag with Picard, but we know Picard is coming to end with its upcoming third season, which have you seen the trailer for the third season of Picard yet?
I have. I'm interested enough. It's been a bit hit and miss, both the first and second season of Picard. You know, there's been parts I've liked, parts I've just snored through because this wasn't for me. But, you know, most parts been pretty damn good.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's some, like I said, it's a mixed bag. I'll tell you the other show, the other animated show, which surprised me is how much I've liked it, is Star Trek Prodigy. It's beautifully animated. If you're a Voyager fan, you're going to be loving it because they're a big part of the current kind of Janeway Renaissance that's going on.
Oh, and Norman, our friend, of course, absolutely loves that show.
Oh, and I can understand why. It's a beautifully animated show, well voice acted, and it's got some very interesting storylines in it. And of course, somebody I know you're a big fan of too, John Noble, is the voice of one of the major villains of that show.
Oh yeah, he's great. He's always, I mean, even out here, we've known him since Return of the King. You know,
exactly.
Such an incredible voice. And then we watched him on Fringe. The J.J. Abrams show.
That might be his favorite role of mine, is Walter in Fringe. He is phenomenal on Fringe. So, yeah.
Oh, he was great in that. So, I mean, look, I think it's fantastic the amount of stuff that's being covered at FPN. And, you know, you listeners out there today will know that, obviously, you know, there's so much different stuff. There's even Alfred Hitchcock material, too, with what Tom and the guys are covering there. They're on hiatus currently, though.
Yeah, they've had a little bit of a shakeup over there. They're in hiatus. They've got some things going on. Real life kind of steps in there. But those guys, if you listen to their back catalog, they know their stuff when it comes to Hitchcock, and it's amazing. I know that they are planning on trying to get some things going here soon. But you know what? There's things that have to be taken care of, and you know what? That's the one thing with the Fandom Podcast Network. You know, we respect people's out. It's not just about the podcasting. It's about a family and a family of podcasters. And sometimes you got to put the family first before the podcast. But you know what? We're proud of what those guys have done, and we know they're going to do great things in the future.
100%. All right, folks, time to head in the pub and talk about Cherry 2000. It's an 87 film, which is without a doubt got equal parts of different genres here. Science fiction, it's dystopian, it's wasteland sort of feel. If anything, there's a little bit of futurism about it, but there's also quite a bit of a kind of a Phil Dickian sort of feel too, with, of course, you know, androids and robots, all that sort of stuff. In this case, recreation, you know, is part of what these robots are built for, obviously, and love, which is one of the guys trying to find. Obviously, Melanie Griffiths features in this, of course, Tim Thomason as well, and a host of others, which we're about to get into. I thought I'd just let you know, when I first caught this one was on a trailer for Masters of the Universe out here, and it said Cherry 2000. It had the booming voiceover of that trailer guy that's always on there, right now, Cherry 2000 on VHS or whatever it was. It was that really heavy smoke tinged voice, you know. And the trailer was great. It showed some of the action sequences. You see some of the characters, and then that was it. And I didn't hear about it for months. And then all of a sudden, Cherry 2000 with the red cover and the car and Melanie Griffiths on the front. And I went, I got to check this out. And I did, and I'm glad I did. It's one of the more fun VHSs.
Yeah, this movie came out in 87, like we said a little earlier. some interesting things with this film. It was directed by Steve DeJarnatt, and what's interesting when you look at his history, he's done a ton of television, but he's only done a couple of films, and it was really this one. Mm. But some of the television he's done is pretty prestigious. He did a couple episodes of the modern Untouchables TV series. He did a few episodes of ER. He did a few episodes of the Don Johnson show, Nash Bridges. He did Strong Medicine, which was a pretty popular show. He even did a bunch of episodes of Lizzie McGuire, of course, the Hillary Duff Nickelodeon show. So he hasn't done anything since 2006, but it's an interesting thing. But really, Cherry 2000, he also did that. He did that in Miracle Mile. And other than that, he was mostly movies or TV shows. So this was one of the only the two movies that he actually ever put out as a director.
Kind of feels like a telly movie. It's in some parts, you know, like it's got a budget. It's definitely movie material, but you can kind of feel the TV nature of it.
I don't know so much, at least for me, my feel of TV nature to it. It felt like a direct to cable movie or a direct to streaming movie or direct to VHS type of film. Mm-hmm. And I really think, at least here in the States, that's where it kind of found itself, was probably more on cable, because I know it became kind of a late night HBO Cinemax type film, and it would go in runs where you'd see it like almost every, you were guaranteed to see it at least two or three times a week within their programming.
Oh, without a doubt. So let's have a look at some of the stats, folks. All right, so it is a 1988 American release. There you go. Well, it says that 87 on some of the other ones too, so we'll have to have a look at that. Yeah. Directed by, of course, Steve Janat, and of course it starred Melanie Griffith and David Andrews. Now, David Andrews, if I remember right, was also in another dystopian movie. And that is, of course, Terminator 3, The Rise of the Machines, where he played the father of John Connor's wife.
Yeah, he played Robert Brewster in that. Brewster. He has got a very long career. He's done a lot of mostly television. I find it interesting. I'm looking at some of his more recent stuff. He was on the show Queen of the South, which was actually an incredibly popular show in syndication here in the United States. It was on the USA Network. He was a senator on the TV show The Boys. He was also in the TV version of Shooter.
Oh, wow. And he also played Jack Crockett in Miami Vice in 89.
Mm-hmm. So,
interesting.
Yeah. He was also, for me personally, he was on he was on several episodes of the TV show Justified with Timothy Oliphant.
Oh, there you go. I know you guys are massive fans of that show, and it's a good show too.
A huge fan of Justified. Not even a question there, so.
Oh, without a doubt. What's interesting too is that he was also in White Earp in 94.
Yeah. Just an overall kind of all over the place career. One of those guys as I like to call him, he's one of those that guys. You know who he is, but sometimes you can't quite place him.
Oh, that's right. Well, we're in the cast. We may as well get into it, folks. So we've got Melanie Griffith playing Edith E. Johnson, or just E. Johnson, which is something that's sort of brought up in the movie as well. Because I think when he's looking for E. Johnson, he's expecting a big, burly guy. And he finds Melanie Griffith, which is interesting. As Sam Treadwell, we've got the aforementioned David Andrews. As, of course, one of the bad guys in the piece, Tim Thomason, as Lester. And again, he brings, you know, his usual Tim Thomason-ness to the production. It's really good. Ben Johnson as Six-Fingered Jake. Brian James, folks, and yet another movie with Tim Thomason. They've done so many together, as Stacy. And then, of course, one of your favorites, buddy, Marshall Bell as Bill.
Let us not forget to a very young Lawrence Fishburne in this film.
Yeah, 100%. I think this must have been just after doing, it would have been just as he was doing Red Heat, because he did Red Heat about the same time as well.
Yeah, so this is when he was still going by Larry Fishburne in films, so.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, we've all seen, obviously, he start in Apocalypse Now as well.
Yeah, and of course, we would be remiss if we did not mention one of your fellow countrymen, and I'm sorry, she kind of beat you on the looks department, Mr. Lethal Mullet, and that is, of course, the late but still very lovely Pamela Gidley as the Cherry 2000 robot herself. She was stunning in this film.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And of course, Brian James, we would be remiss to say that Conan, his friend from before, Tango Cash, is in this, Robert Zadar. And, you know, he's always a presence in these ones.
Oh, very much so. I mean, he's another one of those guys. You know his face. You might not know the name unless you're a big movie buff, but you know that face. You've seen it. I guarantee you, you've seen it in something.
Wasn't he in that that Samurai Cop or whatever it is? There's a like I don't know if it's a B grade. It's even like worse than that. But it's with Sylvester Stallone's bodyguard is the actor in it. I think it's Samurai Cop or something like that. I can't remember. It's crazy.
I think the truth is though, if I'm going to say where he's probably going to be most recognized by people is from his role in The Fifth Element.
Yeah, you reckon? Yeah.
Yeah, that one. He also is Leon in Blade Runner, maybe even in another.
Oh, no, I meant Robert Zadar. I meant Robert Zadar. Because yeah. Gotcha. Robert Zadar was a massive Conan, you know. Hey, I loved you, Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, that, which is well, of course, Robert Zadar is basically known as the face guy from Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash, yeah. Actually, I have to look that up now. So it's Robert Zadar. And I know he's done a lot of like action movies and stuff. Like Maniac Cop was one, and what was the other one? Beastmaster 2. He was in Samurai Cop. I was right. Samurai Cop. It is, man. Yeah, yeah. And basically, and also looks like he was in what else? We got this is his second one. He played Chet in this second movie. Then he did Maniac Cop, and then Maniac Cop 2. He did Future War as well. I think some of these are Don the Dragon Wilson movies as well. And he's still working. Well, I do believe he's passed on by now, but there's still movies up to 2020, Spring Fever, which is put out when he passed away, sadly. Yeah. So passed away in 2015. So there's still movies being worked on five years after his release that he'd shot as well. He was great in those too. Got to say, yeah.
He was another one of those that guy villains. You just knew that face. He had such a unique look to him.
That's it. So, folks, a quick look at this movie. We'll look at screenplay was by Michael L. Moreira, and storyboard was by Lloyd Feinvale. Produced by Edward R. Pressman. There you go. That's a name we know quite well. It was put out in February 1988 in the United States at a budget of $10 million, but it did $14,000 in box office. So not exactly a success.
No, it was definitely not a success in the theaters, but it was, like I said, where it got its fame is cult movie status, whether it was video in your local video rental store or watching it on cable TV. This was not a movie. I didn't even get a mass theatrical release, if I remember correctly.
No, that's right. So have a look, quick look at the plot. It's set in 2017, so we're already past it here, folks. That's crazy. So in the United States has become basically a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and there's a few little pockets of civilization here and there. There's a lot of recycling going on since the 20th century here with everything from technological to manufactural mechanical goods. And basically society has become completely away from the idea of being intimate still with people and out there. So everything is turned to, of course, these robotic technology called gynoids. And basically these are substitutes for partners or wives in this case, this one. A business agent by the name of Sam Treadwell, played by David Andrews, owns a model of one of these called a Cherry 2000 as his wife. But he short circuits her during intercourse on a wet kitchen floor and basically tries to find a new gynoid. And the gynoid dealer tells Sam that the Cherry 2000 model that he's got is no longer made anymore. And basically the only way to find this is to go out to an outer area called Zone 7, where he'll basically find what he's after. But to get out there, he's got to go through some really pretty tough areas and has to find somebody by the name of E. Johnson, who's a tracker, who'll be able to take him to that factory where these are made. And, of course, this is in a hotted up 1965 Ford Mustang. And the adventure begins. This really is an interesting adventure story.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a little strange. When you look at the IMDb description of this, it's in 2017, a successful businessman travels to the ends of the earth to find that perfect woman is find the perfect, already to find that the perfect woman is already under his nose. He hires a sexy renegade tracker to find an exact duplicate of his android wife. Now, this movie is kind of insane when you think about it, just with what the concept is. You add in some of the craziness of the actors who are in this. A lot of the actors in this are classic B movie 80s actors. They maybe hit that mainstream, but they really, they're known faces. And of course, too, let's look at the fact that this is really for a lot of us, our first introduction to Melanie Griffith, who is kind of playing maybe what I would say is an early version of Tank Girl. Except I think a lot better looking than Lori Petty in my personal opinion. That's how she portrayed herself in Tank Girl. But plus Melanie's worked in the red hair and, you know, sorry.
Oh, 100%. Now, what's interesting too about this one is that it has that sort of post-apocalyptic feel like Tank Girl, like Mad Max and a lot of others at the time. But it was, to be honest, and this is very honest about the time of filming, in the 90s and 80s, it was a cheap way to do science fiction. Because, I mean, you're just using scraps from, different film yards and stuff like that, using backlots, using the deserts in and outside of, probably California, I would say. We'll find out about the locations soon, sorry. But what the things is that, it's an easy way to build up sort of a world building, if you like, without going too much on budget.
Yeah, no, and you forget, this is an Orion picture. So, and this is at a time where Orion was doing a kind of lot of low budget science fiction. Another movie that really springs to mind to me around this time that they made this, I think it was maybe about a year later, was the movie Solar Babies, which had Azdar in it. But again, this was when Orion was really kind of like they were kind of coming off their 80s high because they were coming off the original RoboCop and RoboCop 2. But they were kind of definitely on the downcline of what they were in the 80s at this point. So,
without a doubt, you know, and it's interesting because they were the big dogs, you know, in the yard, you know, they were definitely the ones pumping out some interesting material. But this film really does still try and say something about, you know, using obviously technology, or in this case, cloning or whatever it is that they're using in this to make these gynoids, you know, and it gets down to what is real, because Sam's character really believes that this is true love with these things.
Yeah, no, I would agree. You know, there's some interesting trivia here. I don't know if you've seen these or not, but there's one that really stands out for me, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
In an interview Melanie Griffith did in Starlog, it was Starlog issue 109, cover date 1986. Mm-hmm. She was actually pregnant with her first child when she tested for this movie. When she was hired with a clause in her contract that she did not have the baby by September 9th, her role would be recast. Her son Alexander was born August 22nd of 1985, and Griffin started the film 3 weeks later, taking the boy to set. And of course, this is at the time when she was with her then husband, Stephen Bauer.
Oh, wow. She was married to Stephen Bauer. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Great actor. Fantastic actor.
So I very interesting little piece of trivia there.
That's right. Another one is the robots used in this in some of the scenes were from Forbidden Planet and The Day the Earth Stood Still, a scene in the repair shop. So I'm guessing they just basically got the stuff from a movie yard, I guess. Hey.
Well, yeah, I'm sure Orion was just like, it was Orion. They were probably Canon was probably the only company that made cheaper films than Orion at this point that were in major Hollywood releases.
Oh, 100%. Here's an interesting one too. So it says here that Kevin Costner was set to play the lead role in this film, but dropped out because he already had commitments to Silverado in 85, or at least had a role. It doesn't say he was lead, actually. Sorry, I should correct that.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking he's probably pretty glad. I think it worked out well for him.
I think he got the better end of the stick there, didn't he? What else have we got here? It looks like, too, in this one, what have we got? The yellow car in this is a Hawk Trihawk, which was manufactured from 82 to 85, and only 96 of these were made. Now, I do believe that's the three-wheeled thing that we see at the start of the film.
Yeah, because I know in the film... E. Johnson dies a 64 and a half Mustang. Mm-hmm. That is until it's picked up by a magnet and magically transforms into a less classic 66 Mustang. Then when it's dropped back on the ground, it's back to a 64 and a half when it's brought to Lester's Sky Ranch.
Oh, it's crazy, isn't it? Now, here's one for you, too. The film stars an actor from the first three films in the Nightmare on Elm Street series. David Andrews plays an unnamed foreman, and Jeff Levine played a coroner in A Nightmare on Elm Street. Marshall Bell played Coach Schneider in A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. And Laurie Fishburne played Max in A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors, which is one of the harder ones. I tend to forget that one. But is that when Freddy was a snake? I can't remember.
I can't remember. I remember Dream Warriors. A lot of people really liked that particular one because it was the first time really that the victims attempted to fight back. And it kind of changed some of the rules for Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, 100%. 100% it did. Now, folks, we're going to look at with Cherry 2000 where it was shot, which is always interesting to see location. So with the credits on this one, you can find that it was shot mainly in Nevada. And here's some of the places in Nevada. So the van plunging into the open pit is a place called the Three Kids Mine. The river crossing was filmed at Hoover Dam. There's a lot of films that have been done at Hoover Dam there. Remember that one too. The Beehive Group camping area was seen is actually from Valley of Fire State Park. There's also another one shot in Goldfield, Nevada. And they've also, the fortress-like building, which is that they featured in the film, is the Commerce, California. There you go. Which is the location of a former tire factory and is now transformed into Citadel Outlet Mall. You can check out some of the more of that information up on, of course, Wikipedia and, of course, Internet Movie Database, which is always great for that stuff too.
Now, one thing I want to bring up about this film, Adam, and we've kind of mentioned him a couple of different times, is the great Tim Thomerson, because he's really probably at time the most known face in these in this movie. Obviously a classic in the 80s, very much a B-level movie actor with the Transfers films and a lot of other things. But he was in so many things. He was the face that everybody knew. It's like, oh, yeah, that guy, I recognize him. And he's playing the villain in this go-around, which is always fun when he gets to play the villain and be a little bit more insane. Because the guy, let's be honest, Tim Thomerson, it's not, the wiring isn't all in the right places there, is it?
Well, I mean, like, you know, you got a guy who, as a, you know, a lead, he's best in big movies because he's got that sort of feature about him. You know, a guy who was a stand-up comic who became an actor and became more of a, you know, the humor's still there, but it moved into more eccentric roles, you know, like Jack Death, Future Cop. Always a better title than Trances, folks. I know Trances obviously is the US title, but I'm a huge Future Cop fan. I've got the VHS still today. That's how much of a fan I am, folks. And, yeah, I'm getting the 4K release soon from, of course, Full Moon Features, folks. Go and check that out. But he's in everything. The guy just – he was in Crusades, for crying out loud. You know, the Babylon 5 spinoff. He was in all these other movies. Actually, there's five Future Cops, folks, and I'm going to watch all of them tonight on a marathon. Can't wait. It's going to be great. I'll be tweeting about it later, and I'll even tag this man right here.
No, there you go. You know, what's funny is, too, as I look at it – in the 90s, he was actually in the 90s in the United States was an interesting time because we had a lot of syndicated television. He made the rounds on the syndicated television series. He was in the Xena Warrior Princess. He had a couple appearances in Xena. He did Lois and Clark, which of course was the Dean Cain, Terry Hatcher Superman show. He also did a show in which he actually had several appearances on. It was a show on the USA Network called Silk Stockings, which was kind of a noir, super sexy cop show. And he had a few appearances on that. He even did an episode of Renegade.
He did too. And of course, you know, the first thing I saw him in, even before Future Cop, was Uncommon Valor, which he stole all the scenes in. I mean, he's hilarious in that one too. Which actually is, you know, I think a great start for a lot of those ones I would follow on later. You know, some great actors in there. I mean, not just Gene Hackman, but the whole crew on that one. I would go and follow their movies later on. Patrick Swayze, one of his first ones.
and I would be remiss if he wasn't in one of the movies that we love, and I believe we've covered it on a Couch Potato Theater back or a Lethal Mold in the past, and that is Air America.
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%. He's got some of that whole "Is that an Uzi?" which is just gold. It's absolutely gold, folks. Tim Thomason is again somebody that pops up everywhere and is still, to this day, I think one of his best performances is a World War II movie done by pretty much that B grade era, and that is, of course, Zone Troopers, which I'm going to cover here soon. I've got one of the few copies in Australia on DVD, and it is absolutely exactly what you would expect, and it's got some of the people behind the scenes from Future Cop in it too. Hal Ashby plays one of the guys in it too. So, we'll definitely cover a bit of that too. And, of course, Art LaFleur from Air America. Yes, and Future Cop. So that's all going to be there too. Now, where would you put this in the scales? A Hellenbeck scale, obviously, out of 5. But this is a film which, you know, could have been more, could have been better, could have been worse. But where do you put it in the 5-finger scale?
So when you got to take some other factors into this film, you can't just judge it based off what the movie is. This movie is actually very much a cult classic film from the 1980s in the United States. And you also consider that the fact that it introduced us to Melanie Griffith and a few other things. And there's just something about this movie. It's not a great movie, but there's just something about this movie that draws you in and you can't quite explain it. So I would say I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. It's not quite at that 4-5 elite level, but it's something that, you know what? It's a Couch Potato Theater kind of movie. If you come across it's on your TV, you're going to end up watching it, especially if you're a genre fan.
I'm going to agree. It's probably where I'll put it at 3.5. I'll give the movie a little bit more, but it's a cult movie. It's one that, it's a little bit better than Brandon Lee's Laser Mission. I'll give it that, which is about a 3 for me. Anytime you put Brandon Lee and Ernest Borgnine together, it's a 3 straight away.
Well, yeah, it's funny you mentioned Ernest Borgnine. I just watched one of his classics last night.
Airwolf.
No, the original Poseidon Adventure.
Ah, any good?
Oh, it's a classic. You got him. You got Gene Hackman, a very young Gene Hackman in it as well. So very nice. Very solid movie. It was a time when Hollywood was in the 70s really doing a lot of those disaster type films, you know, like Towering Inferno. This one, of course, was remade as just Poseidon. And the basis of it is this large cruise ship on New Year's Eve gets hit with a tsunami tidal wave and gets flipped upside down.
Oh, wow.
And the survivors are trying to climb up to the bottom of the ship to get free.
Oh, wow. I like this. I've seen a little bit of the redo with Kurt Russell a few years ago, too. But I'd like to see the original.
Kurt Russell, I believe, did the Gene Hackman role. But this is one of those times where the original is far superior to the remake.
Oh, without a doubt. Well, folks, there you have it. Cherry 2000, worth your time. I mean, it really is. It's one of those fun little movies that could, and it did. And you know what? Go and give it a shot. If you can find it on VHS, you're a bloody legend. But you can find it on Blu-ray and, of course, DVD via Amazon. And it's on some streaming services right now.
Yeah, I think it's on Tubi. I think it's on Tubi right now. But I'm just going to say, Melanie Griffith in this film, hot. Just saying.
Oh, yeah. So I've got something to say to you before we finish up here.
What's that?
I'd like you to join me next week for an episode looking at Robot Jocks.
Oh, assuming I am not blown away by Hurricane Ian, I would be glad to do that with you. But yes, Robot Jocks I actually remember seeing that in the theaters. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I'm going to have to dig it up and revisit it. But yes, I do. And I remember the ads. Robot Jocks was actually very heavily advertised here in the United States.
Oh, yeah. I remember the VHS more than anything. It was just, it was a lot of fun. And I've got the Blu-ray, but it's in German. So I'm watching it for the visuals, but I have found it streaming in English. So I've been able to watch it again via the projector. So I actually saw it on the big screen at home. So there you go. I've joined you, you know, which is great. So folks, go and subscribe to the show at lethalmulletnetwork.popping.com, socials at The Lethal Mullet. Be sure to go and follow, of course, Kyle at these ones here, at AKyleW on Twitter and AKyleFandom on Insta. Kyle, anything else to say to the listeners before we finish up?
Just as always, it's fun to talk to all the mullets out there, and hopefully we're bringing you some good entertainment. I might even have a challenge movie for you somewhere down the line if I can ever find a copy of it myself.
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
I'm all in. If I ever find a copy somewhere, streaming somewhere or something like that, it's on.
Here's a challenge movie for you, starring Carrie Fisher, called The Time Guardian.
I think I've heard of that. I don't think I've ever seen it though. The one I'm looking at for you is a classic 1986 film, Eliminators.
Ooh, I think I may have seen that. I don't have a copy of it, but I think I may have seen it.
Here, well, you know what? Here, we're just gonna, if you will bear with me for just one second. I am going to. Hold on. Bear with me, folks. It's a little weathery here in Florida. So these technical things are.
Is what? Not... the gynoids are trying to get to you.
This film right here.
There we go. It's got to be B grade with a name like Eliminators.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good. If I'm set for sharing on here, but just do a search for Eliminators, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Because it doesn't seem to want to share for me right now.
A 2016 film?
No, it was
1986
film.
Yep. Oh wow, it looks almost like Terminator. Yep. Yes. Oh, I think I've... Yes. All right, we're going to have to track this one down.
Wow. Yeah, this screams a mulleted type film.
Oh, it does. It does. All right, folks. Let you know that you've got to catch this episode and more, of course, at the Tagger Top. And big thanks to Kyle for being on the show tonight.
Always a pleasure to be here. You know, you got to get mulleted every once in a while. There's just no way around it.
There'll be a mullet waiting for you when you get over here. You realize that?
Yeah, somebody told me it was bright green or something like that. I can't remember.
Ciao, folks. We'll catch.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham, All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
I'm sitting here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that new movie, I'm the lethal mullet. Wow, I'm the lethal. Wow, I'm the lethal. Oh, I'm the lethal mullet.